Good evening, and welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Now. Outbeat Now is a public affairs show featuring news and current issues related to the LGBT community right here in the North Bay. You'll find us on the fourth Sunday of each month right here on KRCB Radio. I'm Greg Moralia. Jeff Basham is off tonight. Our hour begins with Jesse Funes from Positive Images, who will be telling us about the mental health grant she's working with. We'll also be talking with Rachel Gardner, who is the Deputy Executive Director for Food for Thought. She has some news about Calabash coming up next weekend, as well as a couple of tickets to give away. And of course, in the second half of the hour, we'll have this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. There's lots coming up here on Outbeat Now, but first, here's the news with Outbeat radio host Joel Bellagio.
This is Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio. In international news, in an interview with Mexico's La Jornada newspaper earlier this month, the 84-year-old former president of Cuba, Fidel Castro, reportedly confessed that Cuba's revolution oppressed homosexuals as deviants. Some of the worst oppression was carried out at Cuba's now-defunct military units to aid production, which were established in 1965, reportedly to stamp out counter-revolutionary values. These forced labor camps where re-education and rehabilitation were reportedly shut down in 1968. But even after the camps closed, oppression against gays continued, instigated by members of local committees for the defense of the revolution. Discrimination against homosexuals in the 1970s was particularly hard on gay artists and writers, who often were disgraced and marginalized, even driven into exile. Currently, Fidel Castro's niece, Mariela, the daughter of President Raul Castro, heads the National Sex Education Center and has been campaigning for years for greater rights for gays and transsexuals. While in the United States, a federal judge has ruled that a decorated flight nurse discharged from the Air Force for being gay should be given her job back as soon as possible in the latest legal setback to the military's Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy. The decision by U.S. District Judge Ronald Layton came in as Senate Republicans blocked an effort to lift the ban this week. Two federal judges have ruled against the policy in recent weeks. Major Margaret Witt was discharged under the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy and sued to get her job back. A judge in 2006 rejected Witt's claim that the Air Force violated her rights when it fired her. An appeals court panel overruled him 2 years later, leaving it to Layton to determine whether her firing met that standard. Witt of Spokane joined the Air Force in 1987 and was suspended in 2004, just short of retirement, after her commanders learned she was in a relationship with a civilian woman. While in Washington, the White House is assuring gay rights groups that the Justice Department's decision to object to immediately ending the military's ban on openly gay service members in no way diminishes President Obama's goal of ending the Don't Ask, Don't Tell law. Government lawyers were responding to a federal judge's recent ruling that the gay ban is unconstitutional by saying the judge should not enforce that ruling with a military-wide injunction banning the discharge of gays and lesbian service members. According to his press secretary, President Obama was disappointed by the Senate vote that failed to allow for debate to begin on the annual defense policy bill that included a repeal of the Don't Ask, Don't Tell ban. Despite the vote, the Pentagon continues to study how to implement a potential repeal, and the White House will work with the Senate Democrats to end the law. Meanwhile, the Atlanta Constitution is reporting that U.S. Senator from Georgia Saxby Chambliss's office has determined that it was the source of a highly publicized homosexual bashing slur on an internet site. Chambliss's office said it has not discovered exactly who was behind the slur and has turned the matter over to the Senate Sergeant-at-Arms. The office employs 42 people. And more news from the Southland. Florida will immediately stop enforcing its ban on adoptions by gay people following a decision by a state appeals court that the three-decade-old law is unconstitutional. This announced by Governor Charlie Crist. Crist announced the decision after the 3rd District Court of Appeal upheld a 2008 ruling by a Miami-Dade judge who found no rational basis for the ban when she approved the adoption of two young brothers by Martin Gill and his partner. Meanwhile, closer to home, on Monday, October 4th, it's the Napa Valley Unity League Mixer. From 6 p.m. to 8 p.m., at the River Point Napa Valley. For more information, check it out online at SonomaVoiceNightOut.com. And right here at KRCB, we thank all of our current, new, and returning donors for their generosity and support during our recent membership drive. It is only through the financial support of listeners that we are able to provide programs like Outbeat Radio right here in our own community. And there you have it. This has been Outbeat Radio News. I'm Joel Bellagio.
And welcome back, everybody, to Outbeat Now. I'm Greg Moralia. And our first guest tonight is Jesse Funes, who is, I don't think I pronounced that right. She's the grant coordinator and an adult volunteer from Positive Images here in Santa Rosa. Jesse, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thank you. Thank you for having us tonight.
Well, I'm really excited to have you on the show because Positive Images has this amazing grant, mental health grant, to help expand its services to people here in Sonoma County. But you know, let's start out by having you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Okay. Well, I'm originally born and raised in Los Angeles, California, specifically South Central Los Angeles. I came up here for school. I'm a graduate from Sonoma State and currently in the master's program, MFT track, and so I'm focused on that right now as well. I am also a MEEP coordinator for the migrant education at Sonoma Valley High School, and I'm currently working with Positive Images. So that's a little bit about me, but and I'm basically the first one in my family to be going off to college. So all of this is new.
Wow. Well, it definitely sounds like you have your hands full. I'm sure it's a very, very busy life. So tell us a little bit about Positive Images. I mean, Positive Images has been in the community for over 20 years now. Mm-hmm. But I'm always amazed about the number of people who have never heard about Positive Images. Tell us about it and what the mission of the organization is.
Okay. Well, Positive Images was started 20 years ago by Jim Foster. And it was an organization that was a response to having primarily a crisis that was going on with not only gay and lesbian community, but just overall within the AIDS epidemic. And the response was for them to get together, have a support group around young gay men. And it started off with 5 young men. And now pushing forward, there isn't a night that doesn't have young people get together and have a support group. Anywhere ranging from the numbers between 20 and maybe even 41 on a certain night. And so they have had this support and have been continuing to push for the struggle for equality, but also to have a space where you feel comfortable and safe. Positive Images has an organization that is in Santa Rosa. It's been housed at a space and facility that actually runs out of a little house. And because of the services and because they've grown, they have a meeting every Thursday night at the high school, which meets from 7 to 9 o'clock. And that support group is open for young people and young adults from the age of 12 to 25. We also have some other support groups at the house, and those support groups are primarily for transgender-identified individuals, whether that's male to female or female to male. We also have a support group for parents, for PFLAG members, and that's specifically for parents, friends of... Sorry, I got that wrong. PFLAG, Parents and Friends of Lesbians and Gays.
Right.
And there's a huge need in community as well, therefore, transgendered individuals and their parents that are supporting and wanting to learn more. Currently, we are expanding our resources with this grant and expanding our resources with providing needs specifically for parent support, also issues around substance for LGBTQQI. And just the letters in itself, if I could describe that a little bit. One of the things that the mission of Positive Images is to really have it be youth-led and youth-ran. And so the identities lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, questioning, intersexed, and straight allies. That's really important for us because that is the not only the shift but also the evolving community that comes from this area in Sonoma County.
Right.
So one of the things definitely is important to kind of recognize where their shifts have been, because we've had a lot of conversation about the term queer. And a lot of young people, they don't identify, but they do identify as queer, and so that's why that's incorporated
right.
as well.
Well, and I know 20 years ago, there were no gay-straight alliances at the high schools. And so now, with the emergence of the gay-straight alliances at the high schools, Positive Images has really become sort of a center for those organizations. Is that fair to say?
Well, to a certain degree. to a certain degree. I think one of the things that I would like to say is, for example, various schools in certain districts tend to be a little bit more conservative. And we have to remember also that young people, as much as they're coming out, there also is a population that's still not out of the closet. And so it's hard for them to come, for example, let's say somewhere out in Cloverdale or let's say Sonoma City. Not to say that people don't come to the center or to the support group, but there are some young people that don't have the facility or the capability to come because of not being out.
Sure. Or because they simply don't drive.
Right. Exactly. Because they don't drive as well.
Let's get back a little bit to your role at Positive Images and this grant that Positive Images received. Tell us about what you're doing with it and what the grant's all about.
Well, specifically the PEI grant focuses on reducing disparity in access to mental health services. And what we're doing is basically, one, teaching the indicators of mental distress and enhancing relationships with the ethnic communities within the Sonoma County region, specifically working with folks of color, maximizing information, sharing with all of our partners. Because even though Positive Images has been here for 20 years, a lot of folks still don't know about Positive Images, even if it's in the professional setting, in the teaching setting, and in the social setting. And also a piece of that is to train young people with our outreach team to do visibility events. And so that means if we were to go to, for example, the Cesar Chavez Health Fair event, we have never been there before, and so therefore we're definitely working with the Spanish-speaking community. And a piece of this is also to make sure that GLBTQI youth and allies have programs and services, and that if that isn't necessarily established within the organization, that we can help to kind of guide for them to start seeing that there is a huge need.
So tell me about the work that you're doing then with these specific communities. You mentioned on the phone that you're working with a very large Spanish-speaking community. I think you also mentioned the African-American community, even the American Indian community. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, particularly with the Spanish-speaking communities, when we do visibility events, for example, if we have information out at a certain event, one of the things is we don't necessarily expect quite a bit of folks to come to the table, but at least they're seeing, for example, a banner that reads in Spanish, imágenes positivas, and the words lesbiana, gay, bisexual, transgender. We actually included queer. And I think a piece of that is one of the stigmas still is to not talk or approach or even get information, but just the fact that we're there really targets a huge piece that probably wasn't necessarily targeted before.
Sure.
And the other piece as well is we are particularly interested in having that support in Spanish for Spanish speakers only. So there is going to be a meeting for parents to come and feel comfortable and also speak in Spanish about what support they need. I think one of the other things as well is working with the African American community and the Native American community is also another piece that LGBT, unfortunately, sometimes we don't have those resources, and trying to see how we can collaborate with various organizations or communities together. And so that is very much a piece of the grant and trying to see what is needed if anything is left out, which I think we're seeing that as well right now.
So from what you've experienced so far, and obviously from your own experience just in life, tell us about some of the particular challenges, cultural challenges or religious challenges that are facing, well, not just youth, but any gay and lesbian person from the Spanish-speaking community, African-American community, and American Indian.
Well, I think one of the things, particularly for me, you know, looking back and growing up in a Spanish-speaking environment, very religious environment, very homophobic environment, gender roles are very much set, and that it's very difficult to come out as a young person when you have a lot of negativity coming from machismo, and depending on what religious group you pertain to, you're not necessarily expected to come out or encouraged to come out. But I think one of the things that's nice is to at least have support, whether that's at school, whether that's from other let's say parents that are supportive and are talking about these situations, which I think can be one of the things that we don't go to our parents first. We tend to go to a friend and possibly a outsourced member of the family that's a family friend. So it's very difficult to talk about being gay, and even just saying that in Spanish or saying that particularly to yourself is very difficult because of the stigma that comes with it, that regardless, you can never come out. It's probably like the worst thing you can be And you have to really kind of cope with that and deal with that and get rid of sure. that as you get older. So those are one of the things, particularly in the Spanish-speaking community, that I've seen, and that shame piece. But also the fact that if there's just so much more of a lack of words sometimes. And so having the compassion, for example, having a parent come and speak and having them go through being, you know, open and not feeling alone.
Sure.
And we're having both of them work together as well.
So your work is not only focused then on the actual LGBT members, but also on their families as well. Is that right?
Right.
And I've talked with parents, and I've certainly talked with members of PFLAG, and really get it from my own experience with my parents. The parents have to come out too.
Mm-hmm.
Is it particularly challenging for Spanish-speaking only parents to grapple with, you know, their loved one or their young person in their family coming out?
I think definitely to a certain extent. There's certain parents that aren't very comfortable sharing any form of language that even stands out that says gay or lesbian or bisexual or transgendered. And even though they deal with also the coming out process for themselves, I think a piece of that too is because it's so embedded and ingrained that it's negative or it has religious ties and there hasn't been a different outlook on that shared with them, then therefore you kind of are either told to step out of the family. And this piece of honor is very much important because that's one of the true key elements within Spanish-speaking communities, that you have this honor kind mm-hmm. of, not honor system, I want to say, but just family dynamic where they're so rigid that there is no time to expand and kind of create an awareness or learning opportunity. Mm-hmm. So the roles tend to be a bit reversed. And I think I particularly also say that because I had that in my own experience where it took my mother 6 years to probably know that it's not a phase. And I know that that particularly happens within LGBT young people in general. But I think a piece of that as well was for her to also see that as a parent, you know, we still are engaging and learning and understanding. But it can be very negative if you are supporting your young person doing so and coming out.
Right, right. So you mentioned the meetings that are going on with the adults. Is there an educational component to those meetings around maybe even the idea that sexual orientation is a choice or any of the health issues?
Well, with the parents, there's two different things going on. We do panels, and there are opportunities to do trainings with staff and professional staff. With parents in particular, we definitely go through the process of what the coming out stages are for them as a parent and coming out to family and what that is like, the denial piece. Also, why it's important to also collaborate and exchange information with the young person that you may have or adult, because sometimes young people think that the parent is just not accepting, and that's all it is. And because they're not in a parent role, then they're not necessarily understanding the other components to that. But also getting them to a place where they don't feel alone and that they don't feel that they're the only one within their community, and that there are very healthy ways in approaching and talking and getting involved. And so those are pretty much the spaces and the stages what they would go through. But another component to that is really to get them involved and have them speak out as well, hopefully at the end if they feel comfortable, right. to get them involved and then become empowered. And then work in conjunction with their young person, of course. Right. I think one of the things, too, is sometimes the parents would like to come to the Thursday night meeting, and that's great. They are welcomed. But we also want to establish that boundary that if the young person is going to the meeting and they, you know, not necessarily like the parent there, that that's also a space that they should
sure.
probably respect.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Well, and I think that's just such critical work that you're doing, because particularly for young people, if they don't have the support of their parents, they're just not likely to survive real well.
Right.
Right. Right. Well, tell us a little bit about what the future of Positive Images looks like. With this grant and the work that you're doing, how is the organization going to change?
Well, I think one of the things that I definitely see since I've been with Positive Images and since I see what has become of Positive Images, where it's going, I think that there definitely is going to be a different space, hopefully, in the future because of the numbers and the numbers that are coming in. It's a big population. And probably having staff as well, kind of like a PI center. I've been calling it the PI center since I got there. And because we're also seeing the need of having more resources, community resources, that could be available for the communities.
Excellent. Well, Jesse, thank you so much. We're out of time, but we're definitely going to have you back on the show to talk about what the grant's doing as time goes on.
Great. Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And if you'd like more information about Positive Images, you can check out their website at pawsimages.org. We'll be back right after this. Monday, October 11th is National Coming Out Day. Join the Outbeat radio team that night at 7 p.m. for a special edition of Outbeat Extra as we share coming out stories from around Sonoma County. We'll be joined by special guests Judy and Dennis Shepherd, parents of Matthew Shepherd, who will share their thoughts about the importance of coming out to the world right here on KRCB Radio. Our next guest is Rachel Gardner, who is the Deputy Executive Director of Food for Thought here in Sonoma County, and she's here tonight to talk about calabash. Rachel, welcome to Outbeat Now.
Thanks, Greg. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I understand there's an event coming up benefiting Food for Thought, but why don't you start out by telling us a little bit about the organization Food for Thought and what you do?
Sure. Well, I think that probably a lot of your listeners are already familiar with Food for Thought, with the Sonoma County AIDS Food Bank. And we're a nonprofit agency that has been in operation since 1988. And our mission is to provide comprehensive nutrition services for people living with HIV and AIDS in Sonoma County. We have a facility in downtown Forestville, and we distribute weekly groceries, nutritional supplements, vitamins, along with basic dietary and cooking information.
Wow.
And a lot of caring and concern to over 650 clients in the county.
Wow. Now, that's got to be more than a full-time job.
Well, it's a big task. We have a very small paid staff. Luckily for us, we have over 500 amazing volunteers from the community who help us do the work every week. And they do everything from staff the food bank to do deliveries for us. We deliver to about a third of our clients all over the county, and as you know, it's a big county with not a great public transportation system.
Right.
So, and we also have volunteers who do food drives and special events and office work and all manner of things to keep the food bank going.
So you mentioned you deliver to about a third of the clients, so that's roughly 200 or so. How many times a week?
Everybody is eligible to get groceries once a week.
Okay.
And depending upon where in the county people live, they have a different delivery day.
So that could...
volunteers go to people's houses in their own cars, pay for their own gas, and it's an amazing contribution that we have from the community.
Wow, because that's a huge territory.
It is. We go all the way, you know, Tazadero, all the way out to Sonoma, up to Healdsburg, down to Petaluma. Yeah, it's a very, very large area. Unfortunately, it's very hard for people to, you know, who don't have cars or don't have money for gas to come all the way to the food bank. So we really depend on the volunteers for that.
Well, you have an event coming up that is geared to benefit Food for Thought called Calabash. Tell us about this.
Okay. Well, Calabash is a festival of gourds, art in the garden, and it's an important event for us. It's become a very significant a way for us to raise funds for the food bank. And this year it's going to be held on Sunday, October 3rd from 1 to 5 p.m. in our gardens and at the facility in downtown Forestville. And this is our 10th anniversary, so we're expecting a really special day. It's a really, really fun event. We have, it's a silent auction of fine gourd art. About 100 artists from Sonoma County and the Bay Area have created beautiful pieces of gourd art for us that we auction at the event. We also have amazing food and wine that local people donate from some great wineries. Cottonwood Catering, which is a great caterer, is doing the bulk of the food this year. And so that should be really, really wonderful. We have live musicians playing gourd instruments, really, really beautiful music. And the event takes place at the site of our gardens, which should be at their peak this time of year.
Oh, I bet. So this is coming up on which day?
Yes, so the event is on Sunday, October 3rd, in a week.
Okay. And what time does it start?
It starts at 1 o'clock, and it goes till 5 o'clock. The silent auction starts to close by around 3:30, so we suggest people come close to 1 and really enjoy the day. It's quite a festival, great energy, great community spirit. And lots to enjoy.
Now, we're going to give away a couple of tickets in just a few minutes to Calabash, but or those who are not lucky enough to win that pair of tickets, where can people go to get their own tickets?
There's several ways to get tickets. You can go to our website, which is www.fftfoodbank.org. You could also come to our facility, which is at 6550 Railroad Avenue in Forestville, or give us a call at 707-887-1647. Tickets are $40 in advance, but there should be plenty of tickets available at the door the day of the event. They'll be $45.
Okay, so if you're not sure if you can make it, but you decide at the last minute to go, you can just show up there and there'll be tickets available at the door.
Exactly.
Very good. Now, tell us about some other ways that people can support Food for Thought throughout the year.
Well, we do a lot of fundraisers over the course of the year. Many of you may have heard of Dining Out for Life. We, you know, do direct mail, which people can keep their eye on, check out our website, get in touch with us with your email or a residential address for us to, get you on our mailing list. We always need volunteers, and we have a new volunteer orientation, which is on the third Tuesday of every month at 7 p.m. at the food bank. And our volunteer manager, Elisa Baker, hosts that and gives people an idea of the whole range of ways to help. We also take donations of groceries as long as they're in date. We could always use groceries to give out. We love getting produce from people's backyard gardens and small farms. And, of course, we depend on a lot of cash donations from the community that keeps us going all year round.
Great. So all kinds of ways to help out Food for Thought. It doesn't have to be with just a cash donation, which obviously is very, very important, but sometimes can be tough, particularly in these economic times. You can donate your time. You can donate some canned food, or if you have an organic garden that you want to share, you can bring that in as well. We've been talking with Rachel Gardner, the Deputy Executive Director of Food for Thought. Rachel, thanks so much for being with us tonight on Outbeat Now. Well, Rachel and I have two tickets to Calabash next weekend that I will give to caller number two. So give us a call here at the studios. Our number is 707-584-2020. That's 584-2020. Caller number two wins two tickets to Calabash next weekend. And if you'd like more information about Food for Thought, please check out their website at www.fftfoodbank.org. We'll be back with the Outbeat Youth segment right after the music break.
Please don't try to shelter me and wrap me in the promises you make. Please don't try to solve my tears and leave me picking up the pieces of a perilous mistake. And you wonder if I'm strong enough to find my own way out when you always leave me stranded in the shadow of a doubt. Are you ready to release me?
Support for Outbeat Radio and KRCB-FM comes from members and from the Advanced Fertility Associates Medical Group, providing comprehensive fertility care to men, women, and children, men, women, and couples wishing to expand their families. Advanced technology, old-fashioned care, serving Santa Rosa and the North Bay for 25 years. You'll find them on the web at afamd.com.
Time is all it takes me. come rushing in to save me from belief. And years fall from your memory as quickly as the tears fall from my eyes. Caught you hiding in that terrible disguise, and you offered your apology in the manner of a kiss, but you know it doesn't matter anymore. Are you ready to release me? I am ready to be freed. You know I can't escape this feeling anymore. And if time is all it takes me, I will loosen up these chains just enough to make my getaway. And I won't be your prisoner.
Are you ready to release me? I am ready to be free.
That was Michelle Mangione singing Prisoner of War. You're listening to Outbeat Now on KRCB-FM, Santa Rosa. It's time now for this month's Outbeat Youth segment. Welcome to this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. I'm Greg Moralia. Outbeat Youth is a segment for and about the LGBT youth community here in the North Bay Area. Now this month, we're going to start out by announcing our Outbeat Youth Talent Show. We want to feature whatever talent you have right here on the radio. If you're a poet, a writer, singer, songwriter, or part of a musical group, we want to hear what you've got to say. Now this isn't going to be a competition, but rather a chance for you to be heard. The show is going to air next May on Sunday the 29th at 8 p.m. You can make a recording of your poetry, short essay, or song and send it to us, or you can come into the studio that night and perform it live. Your voice will be heard around the world on krcb.org as well as over the FM radio. Now, all you have to do to participate is to go to our website and sign up. So go to outbeatyouth.com and click on Talent Show at the top of the page. You'll find a very simple form to fill out with some details about what you're going to perform. And that's it. After the show, we'll give you a CD of your performance that you can share with anybody you wish. Now, earlier in the show, you may have heard us talking about the Outbeat Radio National Coming Out Day show special. If you'd like to be part of this show by sharing your coming out story, email me at greg@outbeatyouth.com. You can record your story ahead of time or join us in the studio live that night. And it really makes no difference whether you're coming out for the first time or just want to share a special message with a group of family, friends, or people at school. This show is going to air at 7 p.m. on Monday, October 11th, right here on KRCB Radio. And for more information, do go to our website at outbeatyouth.com. And we're back live in the studio. Tonight on Outbeat Youth is Victor Ramos, who is our Positive Images correspondent. And it's great to finally have him here live in the studio. Victor, welcome to Outbeat Youth.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, you're here to talk about Queercoming, which is coming up here in a couple of weeks. What is Queercoming?
Queercoming is basically the equivalent of homecoming, but for the LGBTQ community. Queercoming 2010 The theme is Rocky Horror Picture Show. I'm sure you guys are all excited about that. Brought to you by Positive Images and Monroe Hall. It will be October 9th from 7:30 to 11:30 p.m. at 1400 West College Avenue in Santa Rosa. Tickets are $12 pre-sale, $15 at the door. And for more information on how to get pre-sale tickets, you guys can call 707-568-5030. Again, that's 707-568-5830. The Time Warp 2010 is a substance-free event. And for more information, you guys can go ahead and go to www.pauseimages.org. And I just want to remind everyone who will attend the dance to please come appropriately dressed.
Appropriately dressed. So this is a costume event, correct?
Yes. People can come dressed. There will be competitions and prizes for how people are dressed. They can dress up as some characters from the movie or just come up with their own kind of crazy inventive idea.
Now, how long has Queer Coming been going on?
This is the fourth year that Queer Coming's been going on.
Okay, and this is sort of the LGBT youth version of Homecoming, right?
Yes.
And can straight kids come?
Most definitely. We invite straight kids, but the main purpose is really for LGBTQ kids to have a space where they feel safe to kind of go to a dance and have their same-sex couples there with them.
Right, right. So give me a sense of how many people are usually attending this.
Usually we have around 250 people, which is a very good outcome, especially since this is one of our fundraisers for Positive Images.
Wow.
Being a nonprofit, we don't have a big source of income.
Right, right.
And we have fundraisers like Queer Coming and Hella Gay Prom.
So you're actually doing two dances a year. This is the fall dance, and then there's a spring dance, which is sort of the more formal prom, correct?
Yeah.
But this is the one to dress up and have a great time at. And so you can bring, if you have straight friends, straight allies, you can invite them along to come and have a good time with you, right?
Yeah, definitely.
Now, did you mention, is there going to be food or anything on sale there?
Yes, there is. There will be food provided, not necessarily on sale. There might be a few drinks, kind of juice.
Okay.
That may be for sale.
So maybe some light refreshments, but definitely have dinner ahead of time and then come to the dance afterwards.
Definitely.
And you said it starts at 7:30. When do the doors open up?
The doors open up at around 7-ish. People can go in and kind of relax, kind of like get those butterflies out and then just have a great time.
Okay. And what's the age group that would be attending this dance? Is there a limit?
Age group goes with Positive Images age group from 12 to 25. Though we do have adult volunteers that still go and kind of help us out.
Sure, sure. And I fully intend that Outbeat Radio will be there to get some comments from those in attendance. So if you'd like to talk with us, we'll definitely be there with a microphone ready to listen to what you have to say.
Definitely.
What kind of music is going to be playing?
Just saying, it's better than the school dances. actual music that you can dance to, not necessarily sure. You can request music to the DJ there.
Okay, so you're gonna have a live DJ.
Yes, he is one of the best DJs that we know, and he has a lot of fun.
Do you know who it is?
His name is Tim Lane. He's actually a father of one of our Positive Images members.
Yes, he is. Well, that's going to be great. Sounds like an awful lot of fun. Victor, thanks so much for coming on the air tonight and telling us about Queer Coming. If you'd like more information about how to get tickets, how much the tickets cost, the details about where to go and so forth, go to the Positive Images website, www.pauseimages.org, and we hope to see you at this year's Queer Coming. We'll be back right after this.
The Trevor Project is the leading national organization focused on crisis and suicide prevention efforts among lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and questioning youth. If you're feeling helpless or hopeless, there's always a safe place to turn. Call the Trevor Helpline at 8664-U-TREVOR. It's free and confidential, and you can talk to someone 24 hours a day. Or visit the website at thetrevorproject.org. Be proud of who you are.
Earlier this month, I had a chance to visit Montgomery High School and talk with five members of their Gay Straight Alliance, as well as their advisor, Eloisa Colleen. Why don't you all start out by introducing yourselves and tell us what year you're in here at Montgomery High School.
My name's Brenda, and I'm a sophomore here at Montgomery.
And I'm Vincent. I'm 18, and I was a senior last year at Montgomery.
I'm Heather Bridgman. I'm 17, and I am a junior at Montgomery High.
I'm Barbara. I'm 18, and I was a senior here at Montgomery last year.
My name is Lydia, and I'm 19, and I was a senior last year.
Ms. Colleen, let's start with you. How long have you been here at Montgomery, and what else do you do here at the school?
This is my fourth year here at Montgomery High School, and I'm one of the high school counselors.
Oh, great. Okay. So did you start the GSA here at the high school?
No, the students started the GSA, and they seeked out one of our co-advisors, Ms. Storsan Regan, and I went looking to see if there was a GSA on campus and joined their club.
Okay. Well, let's start with a question that all of our listeners are curious about, and that is, what is your coming out story? Tell us about what happened and if anything interesting transpired during that process. Brenda, let's start with you.
I haven't really completely come out yet. Only a few close friends know, and that's about it.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you very much for having the courage to be on the show with us today. Vincent, how about you?
I actually came out in the eighth grade. I wrote a note to my dad because my mom's a lesbian, so it was easier to come out to her. But I felt like my dad should know first. He kind of acted like it was just a phase and told me to tell him, like, in my high school years. So I came out in ninth grade, and he was really accepting of it.
So you came out to your friends in junior high school. I mean, that's got to be really tough. How did that go for you?
I was harassed during my eighth grade year because a lot of my friends knew, but not everyone else knew. But they kind of suspected of it, but I got through it, and high school was really accepting.
Oh, great to hear. Heather, how about you?
I'm actually bisexual. I found out that I was the summer before sixth grade, and I came out in seventh grade. A lot of people didn't believe me until eighth grade year when I actually got a girlfriend, and they started calling me, like, lesbian and all these sorts of things and, like, in negative connotation. And I've kind of been loud and proud about it ever since.
So what's the experience been like then for you in high school as opposed to what happened in middle school?
People in high school don't really care as much. You know, if you say that you're this, they're all like, okay. You know, I mean, they're shocked at first, but they get used to it.
Okay, great. Barbara?
I'm straight.
Oh, okay. Well, you know, straight people need to come out too. Lydia?
I came out as a lesbian in middle school to one of my best friends who's gay, but I didn't come out to my other straight friends because they're too young to understand at the time. And then later I came out to my whole family over the last few years. And so it's just something that I had to get through. I didn't have too much difficulty.
Well, that's always good to hear. So how did you actually get the club started? Did you just decide to start meeting on your own, or did you approach the school?
Well, we both went to our teachers, one of the teachers, Miss Regan, and also one of the counselors, Miss Colleen. And we talked to them about it, and we said that we wanted to make this club, and then they went and talked to the principal about it, and we started the club because it hasn't been open for several years since it all started, so we started it ourselves.
So how's the attendance at meetings? Do you think that all of the gay and lesbian kids on campus participate? I mean, how many people come to the meetings?
Last year, it wasn't the greatest. There were very few people, and this year, I'm hoping there's going to be more, but I have a feeling it's going to be a very small group.
Well, it's probably really too early in the school year to tell, you know, exactly what level of participation you're going to get. But Vincent, I'll ask you, since you were here last year, what did the demographics of the group look like then?
Most of our members were straight, and they were our allies. A lot of the kids didn't really show up for the meetings because they were kind of busy with other stuff on campus. But it was a really small turnout, but I really do think that we made a great, like, impression on the school.
So give us an example of what you mean when you say you think the group made a real difference on campus. What did that look like?
A lot of kids that were getting harassed for being gay and lesbian, a lot of our straight allies were sticking up for us. We had a table out at Club Day last year, and someone came up to us and was making jokes, and one of the kids on the senior steps came up to him and said, you know, leave them alone. They have just as much right to be here as you, you know. And I felt like that was a really good, like, impression on the school.
Well, Ms. Colleen, let me come back to you for a second. Talk about how the GSA has been received by the faculty and staff here at Montgomery High School.
I think the GSA has been received very well. We have several staff members right now who are in communication with me that they want to help again this year, and very excited about participating. Ms. Fong, our principal, helped with the straight-laced video documentary that was showing in Santa Rosa last year, and purchased a video for Montgomery High School Library. Our librarian was part of our email listserv, and she would send us information. So one of the ways that, even though there wasn't a large turnout with the club, that we kept in communication was through our email listserv. So students would still get information about, like, Heligay Prom through Positive Images or any events or documentaries that were going on in the community.
Well, let me ask each of you to respond to this question. Tell me what it's been like to have a GSA on campus. I mean, what's the experience been like, and how has it made your time here at Montgomery High School better?
At first I started going, but then I got, you know, busy with schoolwork. But the meetings that I went to, it just felt like, I also play sports, like, as an athlete. I just felt like we were all kind of bonding together, and we didn't, you know, really judge each other. You could really feel that. And I just thought that was a really good, comfortable feeling.
It felt like we had a smaller family on campus, even though that we didn't regularly hang out with each other every day. I felt the meeting brought us together, and we bonded over it. And it made me actually feel comfortable enough to show that I was gay and be proud of it.
I think of it as sort of a supportive group for gay and lesbian members. It just kind of helps you be more confident about your sexuality.
So how do you think the GSA here on campus can help educate the rest of the campus community about LGBT issues?
One of the things that I wanted our group to do is hopefully go to a Positive Images speaker training, because those are free. So I thought that would be a good way to segue into being able to be in front of a classroom to have that knowledge and skill base.
Well, that would be a huge gift to this high school campus. I've seen the Positive Images members go out and do their presentations, their panel presentations in front of classes. In fact, I've had them come to my own classes at Napa College and speak. And the credibility that each of the members brings to the whole discussion around LGBT issues is unmatched. So I would really encourage you to pursue that here on the high school. So this high school overall seems like a pretty comfortable place for gay and lesbian students. Do you have a sense that it's easy for kids to come out? Do you think that all of the gay and lesbian students here are out? And if so, why wouldn't they feel comfortable coming out here?
I think they're just, you know, maybe afraid of what might happen, like, you know, being harassed, being, you know, just in general, just being harassed. And I just think that this club, the GSA, just helps you not really necessarily escape it, but, you know, like she said, have someone to fall back on. You can talk about it and feel more accepted when you're with that group.
I know a few people that won't come out. One of the reasons is because they actually have family members coming to the school, and they don't want to getting back to their family because they're afraid of what their parents might think. And
okay, well, that makes total sense to me. I really hadn't thought about that before, but obviously if you're not out at home and your brother or sister is here and word begins to spread that you've come out, that could be a real problem. But do you think it's really that, or does it have something to do with the environment still on campus, despite the fact that there's a club now and support?
That I think it does actually have to do with the atmosphere here too, because a lot of the kids do get harassed here. I personally have been harassed, and a couple of my friends have, but I think that you should just be proud of who you are, and if you are, then you should come out.
I think there's a couple, and I think the basis of it is maybe the group they hang out with, you know, saying bad stuff about the LGBT community, and you know, not wanting to come out because they're afraid they're going to get bashed by their friends.
Sure, sure. Well, that makes sense. How about young people who are questioning their gender? Do you have any transgender young people on the campus who are out or that belong to the GSA here?
Not any that are out to me or that I've come in contact with.
Okay, so how do you think that would go here? I mean, let's say that you have an eighth grader who is male, and over the summer they recognize for themselves that they're actually female, and so they begin their freshman year in high school identifying and dressing as a female. How would the campus react?
I think that'd be pretty difficult because, you know, you're a freshman, you get to the school, you know, first couple of days of school, you're not aware that there's a support group that you can go to, so it's probably pretty difficult. So that's another good way or a good reason to have the GSA.
We have a couple of flyers on my door, I know at least, that are about transgender support groups. So if they come into the counseling office, they're going to see flyers and see that they have allies on campus. So at the very least, one of the first things that they'll see is a poster about a trans group.
Now, you mentioned allies here on campus, and obviously, Ms. Colleen, you're a huge ally of the GSA. Tell us, though, are there other faculty members and members of the Montgomery staff who you would consider to be allies?
There are a number of staff who have gone out of their way to reach out and say, how can I help? I am an ally. And so I just wanted to let students at Montgomery High School know, if you feel comfortable talking to these people, these are who you can come approach about GSA. Miss Tremblay, she's a new art teacher. Miss Michael, she's a new French teacher. Miss Garcia Rossi, she's an English teacher. Miss O'Meara and Miss Serrata, counselors. And I really hope that there are people out there that you feel like you can talk to. Our staff are great, and don't feel like it's just those teachers that you can talk to. But those are teachers who have said, you know, we want to help GSA.
Well, it sounds like you've got a small army ready to help, which is really fantastic. Well, let me ask you this, and this may seem like kind of a silly question to you all who are involved in the GSA. But, you know, here we are in 2010. There are lesbian and gay characters in the media. There's a much greater awareness and knowledge about LGBT issues just generally in society. How important is it still today for a high school to have a gay-straight alliance on its campus?
I think it's important for us to be visible in school, even if we're not so active or we are active, just so students know, as they've said here, the students have said, just so that they know there's someone there to fall back on, because you're not sure, you know, how people are going to react. You're not sure how your friends will react, your family will react. And here is a group of people who, you know, like Brenda said, won't pass judgment. And I think that it's important. And I have a female partner, and we just had our ceremony. So with my students, you know, I'll share my pictures because I think it's important for them to see an adult also who's gone through that and who is happy and successful and now connected with youth. So I think it's important for them to be their own allies and their own support as well. So it's good to see our straight allies and our gay allies. And so I'd like to see a bigger group this year.
Okay. Then for all of those Montgomery High School students who might be listening right now, who might be interested in joining the GSA, either as a member or a straight ally, where do they find you?
Well, they can come every Tuesday at the moment to room J for our meetings. They can always, I'm sure, go to Miss Colleen's office and talk to her about it. And maybe Miss Colleen could hand out email addresses to them if they need people to talk to.
Excellent. Well, we've been talking with Brenda, Vincent, Heather, Barbara, and Lydia, all members of the Montgomery High School Gay Straight Alliance, and their counselor and faculty advisor, Ms. Eloisa Colleen. Thank you all so much for having me here on the high school today. I wish you the best of luck for an amazing school year. And that wraps up this month's edition of Outbeat Youth. Remember, you can follow us all month long on Facebook, MySpace, and Twitter. You'll find the links to all of these sites on our website at outbeatyouth.com. And our past shows are always available for listening and download via iTunes. Thanks so much for listening. Well, that brings us to the end of another show. Tune in next week to Outbeat Radio for Living Proof with Sheridan Gold and Diana Grayer at 8 p.m. right here on KRCB Radio. Jeff and I will be back next month to celebrate the one-year anniversary of Outbeat Now and Outbeat Youth. We'll be joined by Sonoma County's next district attorney, Jill Ravitch. And on Outbeat Youth, we'll welcome special guests Judy and Dennis Shepard, who will talk with us about their memories of their son Matthew, who was murdered in a vicious hate crime in Laramie, Wyoming, 12 years ago next month. You can learn more about Outbeat Radio by going to our brand new website at outbeatradio.com. Thanks so much for being with us tonight, and have a great week.